Chapter 15. The first thing Yasugai noticed as he entered the vault chamber was the light. It was everywhere, dancing across the obsidian and reflecting from the antennae of the machine. Lines of brilliant electric force snaked and snapped before spiraling up into the huge empty space above. Henrikos spread his arms wide as Yasugai and Zaven entered.
Impressive, no?
The three of them stood in the shadow of the device and gazed up at the projected illumination. An immense galactic swirl shimmered above them, 30 meters across, picked out in gold points. The collection rippled and flickered as the machine's power units thundered away.
A stellar hololith, said Zaven, sounding disappointed. A damn big one, replied Henrikos, affronted. You know how much power this is drawing.
Yasugai wandered to the machine's edge. A series of brass spheres hung from a spiked iron frame, all crackling with black lightning.
What are these?
No idea.
Henrikos stomped over to join him.
Thought you might be able to tell me.
I am not techsmith.
No, I know. But it's not machinery. Not any that I recognize, at any rate.
Henrikos held his gauntlet up to the lightning, and it passed through the ceramite effortlessly.
This stuff is not here. Not physically. It doesn't register on any of my instruments. Still, it's doing something.
As soon as the Iron Hands legionary spoke, Yasugai saw the truth of it. The lightning was an overspill from something taking place on the far side of the veil. Somewhere, deep inside the machine, warp energy was being channeled.
It's impossible,
Yasugai said, though the evidence of his inner senses told him otherwise.
Cannot shackle to a machine.
Henrikos snorted.
Well, they did. You can see it. I can see it. I was hoping you could unlock it. It's clearly designed to be used.
Zaven joined them. Waves of light played across his green armour, glistening over ink-black helm lenses.
I would not recommend it.
Yasugai paused. He could feel the ether boiling away within the machine. The barrier between the worlds was thin, dissipated somehow by the apparatus in front of him. He watched the coolant tubes gurgle, saw the runes glow on the housing, and wondered how they had done it.
All we have is a galactic map, said Henrikos,
stalking back across the floor.
It can do more.
Zaven followed him.
It is a sorcerous device. I guess it is. I thought you hated those.
Henrikos turned.
I do. I hate everything about this ship. But you asked me to find out what it was, so I did.
Yasugai looked up at the shimmering hololith as it gently rotated. The scale of it was impressive enough, but Henrikos was right. That was not why it had been made.
I can reach into it, he said quietly.
Both Zaven and Henrikos turned to face him.
Safely? Asked the Salamander's legionary.
I do not know.
Yasugai pressed his palms against the machine, angling his head as though the sounds he sought were physical ones.
I can hear voices, languages, just like in warp. What navigators hear?
He pressed his gauntlets harder against the metal.
Something is alive.
What is it for? Asked Zaven. Can you tell that?
Yasugai could almost hear what the thing was thinking. Fragments of thoughts brushed against his consciousness, as fleeting as sunlight on water.
His communications device, he said slowly. I think. Long range. Etherborne.
He removed his hand, which tingled as it was withdrawn.
Like star speakers, more powerful. Uses warp directly. I think it's very old.
Henrikos nodded.
It was built before this ship was. Can it help us?
Zaven sounded doubtful.
Yes, said Yasugai. It recognizes me. I can unfold it.
Zaven moved pensively towards the near wall of the device. Bloody scrawls covered its surface. A rust-brown handprint stood out among the streaks.
I do not like the way this feels.
Damn you, then, spat Henrikos. Why did we take this ship? You want a way through the warp? They're giving us one. But if you want to throw it...
I understand, Bion, said Zaven calmly. I know what we are doing. But is there any other way?
The Iron Hands legionary shook his head.
Nothing else I've found. If you don't want to activate it, then we should leave. Scuttle the ship and take our chances on the others. That's it.
Zaven looked up at the projection again and stared at it for a long time. Yasugai could tell what he was thinking. The Word Bearer. That is the other way.
Do what you must, Zaven said eventually, his voice heavy.
Henrikos stood back, satisfied. Yasugai examined the brass spheres more closely. Moving slowly, he extended his hand to touch the surface. As he did so, a static tingle ran down his arm. He closed his eyes. Immediately, the chatter on the edge of his inner hearing grew louder. He heard a cacophony of semi-human voices whispering in his mind. Nothing of what they said made any sense. They were like half-words used by infants or animals. In his mind's eye, he saw a smoky, congealing miasma boiling at the core of the structure. Then, swimming up out of the confusion, he saw two runes clarify before him. Both glowed a furious red, and their outlines seemed out of focus. Looking directly at them was hard. He selected the one on the left, reaching out to it with his thoughts. As he did so, the babble hushed a little, and something like a hiss ran through the machine's innards.
Ah, Henrikos said. Yes, that is more useful.
Yasugai opened his eyes. The galactic map was overlaid with a hugely complex web of moving streams. It looked organic, like the lattice of blood vessels in a body. Worlds were picked out in various luminescent shades, each one marked by runes in a language Yasugai could not understand. The starfield underneath was mottled and rumpled in some areas, but clear in others.
Those are warp routes, said Henrikos enthusiastically. Navigator channels. They must be. That's the core network.
Yasugai's gaze followed the translucent swirls.
I agree. And the worlds. That is Terra. That is Colchis.
The warp conduits meandered and diverged like a silted-up river delta. Few led straight, and most terminated in stormy wells.
What is growing over Ultramar?
Asked Zaven, pointing to a truly massive pattern of storms running in a single swathe across the galactic southeast.
They're cut off, said Henrikos.
If not now, then soon, agreed Yasugai. And not just them. See the barriers around Terra and Chondax?
As his gaze rested on the system where the Khan had been sent, he noted how far the interference was clearing. The barriers in the warp there looked strange, almost geometric, as if caused by some algorithm rather than the fluctuations of the ether. Whatever its origin, the system looked to have been completely severed, though now a host of passages were opening up around it.
So they can see the shape of the warp storms, said Zaven. Useful.
How many of these machines can there be? Asked Henrikos. The Hesiod doesn't have anything like it. What else can it do?
Yasugai smiled. Henrikos's passion for the mechanical was his most appealing attribute.
More,
he said, channeling his mind back within the device. He directed his thoughts towards the second rune, and a second mesh of overlays rippled across the galactic hololith. By the time he looked up again, the shapes had solidified into recognizable sigils.
By the forge, whispered Zaven.
For a moment, Yasugai couldn't see what he meant. Then, slowly, the shapes made sense to him.
Legion icons, he said.
Henrikos nodded.
Battle groups, expeditions, war fleets, static formations.
He shook his head.
They know too much.
They didn't know everything. There were no movements recorded close to Terra, and some legions, like the Raven Guard and the Night Lords, were completely missing. However, the extent of what they did know was chilling. The Blood Angels' trajectory was marked in red. They appeared to have been heading directly for a single system on the extreme eastern edge of the galaxy. The Ultramarines looked to be hemmed in around the margins of their great star empire, and massive formations of word-bearers and world-eaters were heading through the warp storms directly for them.
Does Gilliman know this? Breathed Zaven, horrified.
Henrikos shook his head grimly.
Doubt it. He'll be as blind as the rest of us.
The detail was not complete. Some of the sigils glowed only softly, as if the machine were working on incomplete or unreliable information. The display had the look of an ancient manuscript, rather than a data slate ledger. The icons were florid, the symbols mystical. Some were completely indecipherable. Others flickered in and out of existence altogether. Still, it was far more complete than any galactic survey Yasugai had ever seen.
How are they doing it?
Asked Zaven.
No Augur station has the range, said Henrikos.
Agreed, said Yasugai. They are tapping the warp. Those fleets are deep in the ether. Their presence is known to those that dwell there.
Yasugai looked up at the Chondax sector. It was empty. Warp storms raged in broken fragments around it, the last embers of a long inferno.
That is not enough, said Zaven quietly.
He turned to Yasugai.
It cannot be. They cannot just know these things. If they did, the war would already be over.
Yasugai nodded, his eyes following a trail out of Chondax. Just on the edge of vision, he thought he caught fragmentary echoes of Chogorian symbolism and focused his mind on it.
Something else is needed, he said, distracted.
Henrikos snorted.
Prayers and petitions?
Do not mock, said Yasugai,
his eyes following an indirect spinward route. Back towards Chogoris? Surely not. Zaven moved carefully towards the brass spheres.
Weathermaker, the Salamander's legionary said cautiously. Is it wise to keep this active?
Yasugai heard the hissing again, and immediately snapped his thoughts back into focus. He whirled around and saw the spheres blazing hard with dark energy.
No, perhaps not,
he said, extending his mind back into the heart of the machine.
We have seen enough.
His mind reached back within the device, down to where the symbolic runes glowed in their fog of semi-reality. He moved to shut down the process, and the first of the two sigils sunk into darkness. The hissing grew. He saw what looked like a pair of eyes swimming up from the miasma. He had seen such eyes before, but only in visions. His hearts began to beat harder. He reached for the second rune, closing it with his mind, sealing it off as if he were clasping a hand over a candle flame. It would not disappear. It kept burning away, furious and intense, before rotating slowly and staring back at him.
Shut it down, he heard Zaven say,
though the voice sounded far off. Yasugai tightened the focus of his mind. The rune remained stubbornly in place. The coils of smoke around it grew in solidity, forming shapes in the half-present murk. A voice emerged from the babble, a single voice, bestial and maddened, raging with the anger of something lashing through layers of inertia to get at its prey.
Shut it down! Zaven shouted.
Yasugai could not see what was happening in the chamber. His mind sank further into the warp interface within the machine. A face swooped up out of the morass before him. A long face, high-crowned, bone-ridged, blood-fleshed, a distillation of human nightmares. It locked eyes with him. And in those eyes were reflected all the pains, all the agonies, all the terrors of a million worlds. Yasugai tried to pull away and couldn't. The creature had seen him. Its malevolent eyes narrowed, its glistening flesh solidified. And then, with a twitch of cat-like sadism, it smiled. Death had never held any terror for a son of Chogoris. In the days before the Master of Mankind had come, it had been everywhere. In blood feuds, honor killings, on the hunt, from want or exposure or disease. The plains people took it in their stride, neither complaining of it nor celebrating it. They did not raise mausoleums to the slain, but left the bodies to be eaten away by the winds and carrion birds. In that, as in everything else, the Khan had become one with his adoptive home. He had seen 100 deaths before leaving his unnaturally short youth behind. Adulthood brought more bloodshed, much of it at his hands, and he met it in the same detached fashion. He had never mourned. Death was the way of things, the immutable pattern of the universe. It was to be welcomed, for it curtailed sickness. It cut off the vigorous soul before it could become slack. It cleared the ground for new growth. Even Primarchs had died, so it was whispered. Even gods. For all that, it was difficult to witness what had become of Magnus's iridescent city of glass and crystal. The Khan crunched through layers of grey-silver dust, watching heavy skies scud across the blackened shells of old structures. The lightning never stopped, flickering away on the far northern horizon, like dancing cracks into another, stranger reality. Every so often, a deep peal of thunder would boom out, the irregular heartbeat of a world in the final throes of its death agony. The Khan's Keshig fanned out around him. They went as warily as he, and their bone-white armour made them look like ghosts in the dark. Already the dust of Prospero was clinging to them, tainting them, blotching and marring the white and gold of their battle-plate. The Terminators bore their energy-shrouded blades, glinting pale blue. As they moved, their combi-bolters swept the terrain ahead, whining faintly as targeting reticules half-locked onto half-targets. Everything that remained in Tizca, the place that Magnus had once proudly called the City of Light, was a phantasm. The Khan stalked at the head of the group, his Dao blade held lightly in his right hand. His long fur-lined cloak hung stiffly, stained black where the dust cleaved to it. The way ahead was picked out in the false colours of his helm display, though even that failed to leaven the oppressive sense of utter dark. The cloud cover was so complete that they might have been creeping through the bowels of some colossal hive spire.
"Something up ahead,"
reported one of the Keshig Terminators over the squad vox. Queen Jar held up a gauntlet to halt the squad.
"A detail?"
The Terminator paused.
"No, nothing," he reported. "False positive."
It had happened many times. The sensors were scrambled, crazed by the heavy rads and static that buzzed through the atmosphere. The Khan pressed on. He half recognized some of the buildings. They soared up around the creeping armored figures at their feet, just husks now. Coal-black walls with nothing but smouldering rubble within. He had caught sight of old emblems amidst the debris. Imperial iconography. Prosperine eye devices. Stylized homages to ancient knowledge and the esoteric.
More corpses,
voxed Quin Jar as they passed down the long boulevard leading towards the heart of the ruins. The Khan had already seen them. Most were mortal skeletons, stripped of skin and muscle by some terrible weaponry. A few items of armor had survived in the dust, domed helms, shoulder guards, and boots. Some of the corpses were much larger. Ceramite lasted longer than carapace plate, and many crimson armor pieces remained wholly intact. Most had the 15th Legion's sunburst icon, picked out in gold or sapphire, slowly eroding as the toxic dust wore at it.
"And this," said Quinjar,
walking over to a long staff weapon, half buried in a heap of drifting ash. He pulled it free and shook the detritus from it.
"I have seen these before."
The Khan had too. The weapon was golden, heavily encrusted with star and moon engravings, and far too large for a mortal to lift, let alone wield. A long black blade slung under the main shaft had once spat with disruptor energy. A bolter fixed further back had once cracked from shell recoil.
"Custodians,"
the Khan voxed, stating what the others already knew.
"But whose side were they on?"
asked Quinjar hopefully.
"You know that, Zha," said the Khan, pressing on.
He had not wanted to believe it, not truly. His feelings about Russ had always been mixed. Respect for the warrior, exasperation at the boasts, the self-appointed exceptionalism. It was another thing, though, to witness what he had done, to see the truth of the Star Speaker's testimony. The Khan found that the truth, now that it was before him, was a bitter draught indeed. His boots kicked against a steel-grey pauldron, and it rolled, rattling away from him. Like everything else, it was desiccated, scoured down by the wind. He saw runes on the curve of it, still visible, angular, and Fenrisian.
"Nothing," muttered Quinjar, following closely. "Nothing alive."
His tone made it clear that he saw no purpose in staying. No doubt he was already thinking through the implications of what they had seen, where they would have to go, and whom they would have to fight. The Khan slowed, listening hard. He blink-clicked his armor's aural filters off and let his enhanced hearing do its work. For a moment, over the dull hum of the Terminator power units and the faint spit of disruptor fields, he thought he caught something out of place. It had been like buzzing.
"I know where we are,"
he said, looking out beyond the shattered sawtooth edges of nearby edifices. Over to the left rose the jagged remains of a pyramid, still hundreds of meters high, even in its ruin. A few panes of dust-opaque glass clung to the substructure. Through a gap in the surrounding walls, he saw another highway running almost parallel to the one they now walked.
81 radial streets. Ridiculous.
"Leading where?"
asked Quinjar, a blade in each hand, his helm underlit blue from the field discharge.
"The cult temples," said the Khan, pressing on. "The great pyramids, the oculum, everything."
They passed more of the same, twisted corpses dried out and decaying. Thunder growled over them all, the lightning bleaching the colour from their livery and rendering them all as grey phantoms in the glass. Ahead of them, the street widened, revealing three rhino transport chassis slumped amidst the remains of some kind of barricade.
"A stand,"
remarked Quinjar, as he pushed coils of razor wire aside.
"Did them little good."
A few hundred meters ahead, the street opened up further as other thoroughfares intersected. Like a river reaching its delta, the radial highways converged, merging into a wide square. As they reached its margins, the scale of it became steadily apparent. The space before them was vast, yawning away under the fulgurate skies like some fire-blackened imitation of the plains of home. Once it must have been paved and well lit, surrounded by elegant architecture and thronged with crowds. Now, only debris remained. Armor shells, the chewed remains of vehicles. Fissures had opened up among the marble flagstones, some wide enough to swallow a man, all as tar-black as the void. A lone pillar stood at the very centre, broken off about 50 meters up. The stone plinth at its base still carried recognizable figures, a robed woman being lifted aloft by a one-eyed armoured figure. The Khan walked out across the square, heading for the pillar. The Keshig spread out silently in his wake, Qing Zha with them. As he walked, the ground under his feet felt increasingly fragile, as if it were just a thin skin over nothing. Cracks were everywhere, cobwebbing out from the lips of the fissures like probing fingers. This had been the epicenter of the inferno. Perhaps the crust of the world itself had been compromised. Then he heard it again, a buzzing, like the drone of massed insect wings.
"Are you getting that?" he asked, halting beneath the long, faint shadow of the pillar.
The Keshig was by now dispersed widely, picking their way steadily through the residue.
"No life science," voxed Qing Zha carefully. "No proximity markers."
His voice gave away his uncertainty. They could all feel it, whatever the armor readings told them. The Khan turned back to the cratered and pockmarked pillar. It reared up into Prospero's eternal night, and the mottled sky above raced and boiled. Then it came again, distinct this time, like the whine of an insect swarm. The Khan whirled, blade in hand, and he felt the stone flag shifting under him. His armor still registered nothing, no targets, no bodies. By then the Keshig were moving too. They circled, blades and bolters ready, searching for an unseen enemy. One of them opened fire, and the sound of it crashed jarringly.
"Eyes!"
Vox Qing Zha, suddenly running across the square towards, seemingly, nothing.
"Disable auto-senses! Use your eyes!"
The Khan blink dismissed the lattice of targeting reticules and environment compensators, and the square sank into the dreary fog of unenhanced vision. Only then did he see them. Shimmering in spectral blue-white, arthropodic, winged and massive. There were dozens, sliding up out of the ground like unquiet shades rising from the grave. They disturbed nothing, not even a fleck of ash. Their rigid outlines glowed with the ghosting phosphorescence of witchlight, though their hearts were as transparent as glass. They were ruined things, twisted and hunched, though still twice the size of the Terminators before them. They had bulbous, roach-like thoraxes and abdomens, tattered gossamer wings and segmented limbs that trailed against the ground, grotesquely swollen brains throbbing with an eerie light amid tight cranial folds burst out from low-slung tangles of mandibles. Once free of the broken earth, they swayed through the air jerkily, lurching as though blind and famished. The Khan gazed at them stonily.
"Psych Nguyen," he said, taking up his blade. "So, something survived after all."
Etheric energy sparked across Yasugai's armor.
"Oh, go back!"
he commanded, raising a fist. Deep in the Vorkorda's warp interface, the nightmare face rose up, still grinning widely. Yasugai saw rows of needle teeth, pupilless eyes of molten iron, an extended claw. The creature snarled and writhed, rocking back and forth. The miasma around it thinned. The rune remained activated, driving the machine, thinning the barrier between worlds. The power it controlled seemed to be accelerating, ramping up like an overloading drive engine. Yasugai fixed his mind upon the rune. It spun before his mind's eye, throbbing like a wound in the fabric of the universe.
"Close!"
he commanded, then again lapsing into Korchin.
"Yakin!"
With a grind like rusty iron being dragged over steel, the rune winked out. Yasugai opened his eyes, relieved. He turned to look back up at the galactic map. It had changed. The stars pulled together, dragging into a single clump like a swarm of glowflies. The golden luminescence intensified, burning painfully. The machine's engines gave out in a series of smoky clangs, but the shimmer kept growing. Zaven drew his hammer, Henrikos his bolter.
"Can you halt it?"
the salamander's legionary asked, standing his ground while staring at the swirling fog above. Yasugai took his staff in both hands. The Adu skull at the tip rippled with fingertips of lightning. The whole chamber felt suddenly tight and humid, as if too much air were pressed into too little space.
"A machine is closed," he said.
Henrikos backed away.
"Well, something's still working."
The stars drew closer, accelerating into conglomeration and melding hard. A clap like thunder echoed around the vault, cracking the machine's containment shell and resounding up the shaft above them.
"Get back!"
warned Yasugai, suddenly realizing what was happening. The lights shuddered out. A sound like a fractured scream echoed from the air around them. What remained of the projected starfield coalesced into an inky clot and fell fast, ripping into corporeality and cracking to the floor. It burst, shattering like an eggshell. Bursting free of it came a skeletal, long-limbed creature with blood-red skin and long, curving horns. It had the same molten eyes, the same needle teeth. It was bigger than all of them and moved with a jerky, unreal speed. It pounced across the deck, squatting like some vast and grotesque insect, before leaping right at Zaven. Henrikos fired first, hitting it with bolts that seemed to glance and whine from its hide. Zaven rushed forward, hauling his hammer round to meet it.
"No!"
roared Yasugai, too late to drag him back. The salamander's legionary sent the hammerhead cracking into the creature's torso. The blow was perfect. It should have ploughed into its ribs, breaking them open and sending the creature sailing, broken-backed through the air. Instead, Zaven was thrown clear of the impact with a sharp crack of displaced energy, his weapon ripped from his grasp. His massive armored body crunched into the vault wall, denting the stone and showering him with dust. The creature sprang after him. Its every movement was blurred and splintered, as though recorded on some broken pictolens. It landed, tearing at his throat, its claws pinning him, its jaws slavering in close and worrying at him like a dog upon its quarry. Yasugai levelled his staff.
"Tar Quarija!" he shouted.
Silver lightning, sharp as charged neon, leapt from the staff and smashed into the creature, showering it in a coruscating burst of ether light and ripping it from Zaven's prostrate body. It shrieked as it flew clear, crashing to the deck again in a tangle of spines and hooves before twisting around to scream at him. For a moment, Yasugai found himself staring directly into its face, and the malice of it chilled his hearts. He summoned more lightning, hitting the thing again and sending it skidding further across the floor of the vault. Warp energy was the only thing that seemed to hurt it. Henrikos kept firing all the while, emptying his magazine into its flesh, but the bolts had no effect. Zaven stayed down, out on his back and gasping wetly for breath. Yasugai went after the creature, and the ether surged through him like a flood, hot and painful.
"Punish!"
he roared in Gothic.
"Go back!"
More bolts cracked into the creature's smouldering hide. It raged, skittering on the deck, screaming in pain. Lightning sparked and lashed from its horned and spiked back. Yasugai ramped the intensity up, pouring everything into the attack. Amidst it all, the creature tensed for another pounce, shouldering up against the deluge of incorporeal spears of light. Its long limbs drew inwards, its spiked shoulders rose, its whip-like tail coiled. Then it blew apart. A deafening bang ran around the chamber, followed by an enormous rush of forge-hot air. Fragments of bone and sinew splattered and clinked from the walls, and thick laces of bile slapped across Yasugai's armor. Echoes of the creature's animalistic screeches rebounded for a moment, long, shrill, and hateful, before the last slops of otherworldly flesh dropped to the floor. Henrikos stood motionless, his weapon empty, staring at the epicenter of the explosion. For once, he had nothing to say. Yasugai looked around him, warily, half expecting to see more horrors pouring out of thin air. But the chamber remained empty, marked only by the ticking down of the great machine and the stink of burning.
"And what?" said Henrikos eventually. "Was that?"
Yasugai didn't know. He had heard legends of things that swam in the deeps of the warp, sentient dreams of ancient presences, but never guessed that he would live to witness one. They should not have been able to live and breathe in the material world, any more than he could live in the seething mass of the ether.
"Have you ever travelled with Navigator? Seen the things they do?"
"We should never have used machine,"
Yasugai said, breathing heavily.
"Knew they had fallen. Did not know how far. Screaming, clawing at ship."
Henrikos grunted caustically, though the sound was interrupted by Zaven's hacking cough. He had not gotten to his feet. Suddenly anxious, Yasugai hurried over and crouched beside him.
"How bad, brother?"
The salamander's breastplate was glossy with blood. It pumped out freely from a deep neck wound, fountaining from the seal gap between helm and gorget. The ceramite was rent, the fine gilt detailing marred by tooth marks. Zaven's breath came in thick heaves. The blood wasn't clotting. It rushed out of him, splashing across his plate and dripping on the floor. Yasugai reached for the broken helm seal and prized it open. Henrikos came to help, taking the helm and gently pulling it free. Mechadendrites whirled from his gauntlets, tiny saws and needles. As soon as he saw Zaven's face, Yasugai knew that they would not be needed. The salamander's ebony features had already turned grey. His lips were pale, his eyes glassy. Yasugai pressed his gauntlet against the ragged wound at his neck, but the blood welled up unstaunched between his fingers.
"Hold on, brother," he urged.
Zaven grabbed Yasugai's arm by the wrist, his face creased in pain.
"Use what you saw,"
Zaven rasped, blood running between his teeth.
"I should never have done it."
Zaven held on, clutching his arm tight.
"You see what they are now. Use it."
His head lolled back, his eyes lost focus. Yasugai felt sick.
"Brother, I am sorry."
"Just use it."
Zaven worked hard to spit out the words.
"Storm Witch,"
he grinned painfully.
"Find your gun."
Then Zaven coughed up a thick gout of blood. His back arched, his hands gripped tighter, before finally falling limp. The blood slick expanded under him, as dark as oil. For a moment, Yasugai remained motionless, stunned by the speed of it. He extracted himself from Zaven's bloody grasp. His body was still combat-primed, flooded with hyper-adrenaline. But for a moment, he had no idea what to do. Nausea slowly took over from aggression.
"Nightmares,"
he said numbly.
"They release nightmares."
He pulled himself to his feet, hearing the dull clunk as Zaven's gauntlet fell back.
"You never see one before. Not on Isfan?"
Henrikos shook his head.
"I heard stories."
"Stories no longer. This ship should be destroyed. We must leave."
Henrikos stayed crouched over Zaven, holding the bloody helm in one hand.
"Then what?"
he asked.
"Back to warp. I saw where they are going."
"Chigoris?"
"No,
Prospero.
Henrikos looked up at the smoking silhouette of the machine.
If we know that, they do too. How are they doing it? How are they locating legions as they move?
I do not know,
said Yasugai, feeling the bitter price of the little knowledge they had bought.
I do not know.
Why do you call them lodges?
Asked Shiban.
It's a tradition, said Torgon, drawing his cowl up over his head.
I have to wear this?
To begin with.
Shiban hesitated. He felt awkward, foolish. More than that, though, it was clandestine, and for reasons he still did not understand.
I know, said Torgon. It's tedious, but here's the thing. We're all equal in there, at least once the oaths are taken. Show your face before then, and you'd be taking your rank in with you.
Shiban looked at Torgon. With his face hidden in shadow, he looked like a thief. Not even his scar was visible, the mark of the Legion, the one thing that set them apart from all others.
This will be a small gathering?
Torgon nodded.
Nothing grand. They'll be pleased to see another member.
How many lodges are there?
Across the whole Legion? I don't know. A lot, I think. It fits with the warrior ethos. Someone told me a quarter of Sons of Horus are lodge members. I've no idea whether it's true.
How could you have?
Well, quite. Ready?
Shiban pulled the cowl over his head, feeling faintly ridiculous. Torgon moved to the door and depressed the entry rune. It slid back to reveal a darkened chamber. Five or six others stood in the flickering gloom. Shiban followed Torgon in, and the others parted to give them room. The doors hissed closed.
"Well met, brother,"
said the first of the gathered lodge members.
"You bring new blood?"
Torgon bowed.
"One who has proved worthy."
Shiban took his place in the circle. The faces of the others were only partly hidden. If he had wanted to, he could possibly have guessed the identities of some. The air smelled oddly sweet, as if incense might be burning somewhere close by. All of the assembled white scars wore their armour under their robes, standard procedure now that the blockade had been established, and it made them look bulky and out of proportion.
"Well met, stranger,"
said the speaker.
"You wish to join?"
"To observe," said Shiban.
"That is acceptable. There is nothing to hide."
"You are wearing a cowl."
"The time for decision is drawing closer,"
the speaker went on, addressing the others.
"Questions have been answered. Some matters have been clarified. We can speak more plainly now than before. You have all seen the images from the planet below. Can anyone doubt now what we heard from the War Master's star speakers? The schism has come, brothers, just as the Kargan always warned us it would. Now we have to take sides. Our task is to ensure the Fifth Legion remains pure of purpose."
Shiban listened carefully. So that was it. Not a neutral brotherhood, but a faction for Horus. Part of him was surprised at the overtness of it, but perhaps that was naive. He could feel Torgon tensing up next to him, as if anxious about Shaban's reaction to what he was being told. Everything about the Terran Khan's desire to see him inducted into the lodge felt genuine, almost touchingly so.
"They believe in this."
"The link remains established," the speaker went on. "The loyal fraternities have already responded, and our window for action shrinks. Preparations are being made across the fleet. We need to be ready."
The speaker's mouth, visible under the shadow of his cowl, spread into a benign smile.
"They are coming, brothers. They are coming here, to Prospero."